Welcome to Online for Authors, where I, Terry M. Brown, author of character-driven fiction and host of the podcast, introduce readers to characters they'd love to invite to lunch by interviewing authors, discussing their books, learning about the writing process, and even, on occasion, chatting live with a panel of authors to discuss topics relevant to both readers and writers. My guests today on the Online for Authors podcast are the editors of Feisty Deeds, Historical Fictions of Daring Women, with a foreword by Amy K. Runyon. The stories in Feisty Women span six centuries. Within these stories, you'll find that even when time periods and geographical locations vary greatly, women's struggles as they confront adversity are often remarkably universal. The 23 stories in this collection follow ordinary women from the 1470s to the 1960s as they rise to meet life's challenges. Foreign invasions, the outbreak of war, rigid domestic authority, strictures of society and religion, the supernatural, love and family bonds all serve as catalysts for the feisty deeds of the women in these tales. Welcome to Online for Authors. Today I have the editors of Feisty Deeds, Historical Fictions of Daring Women, with a foreword by Amy K. Runyon. With me today is Christy Matheson, Carolyn Korsmeyer, Elaine Schroller, Kay Smith Blum, and Kimberly Sullivan. Welcome, everyone.
Hi, how are you?
Thank you. Hi.
Yeah, it's so wonderful. It's wonderful to have everyone here. For those people who've watched my show before, they know that I'm not used to having a crowd, so this is kind of fun and interesting. But we're going to get started. And Kay, tell us a little bit about Feisty Deeds. Like, what are people going to find in this anthology?
I think the reader who's looking for inspiration about what women can do and have done will find great surprises at the historical depth of when certain women did what at the time might have seemed small, but was in fact powerful acts that happened in common day occurrences that combined could change things significantly in their worlds.
Right, right. So Kimberly, what prompted this anthology? Like, when did we say, oh, historical fiction and feisty deeds of women? Like, where did that come from?
Yeah, well, this was an amazing experiment for us because we're all accidental short story editors. We all, of course, write, but we had never edited an anthology before. So this was a practice for us. So we had a big Mount Everest-sized learning curve. So we've been doing this for the last year. As you know, Terry, because you're also a member of Women's Fiction Writers Association, this came out of our historical fiction group because we wanted to find something to be able to do as a group. We were looking for ways, we were talking about it, we were looking for ways that we could work together more, joint market, really promote our work. And so the idea came out of that, and that's when the five of us began meeting. And I hope I'm not embarrassing us to say it's been a little over a year. So it took us a while to get this process, but we decided on a theme. And in fact, Feisty Deeds, we left it pretty open because we were curious how people would interpret it. And I think, I hope I can speak for all of us when we've been speaking about it a lot, when we just say it was such a delight to get all of these different stories, different perspectives, different parts of the world, you know, going from the 15th century to the 20th century, really interpreting it completely differently. So that was kind of exciting for us as we were learning the process. So for our first effort, it was a lot of fun.
Fantastic. So Christy, tell me a little bit about this year-long learning process. What's hard about being an editor of an anthology? Like, what is it? Is there one thing, or is it like a group of things that just makes this a kind of a difficult process?
I think that what
What is difficult is just how many details there are that it seems like, oh, we will just do this one thing and we break it down and there's actually 57 things that we need to do and we need to check them. And we need, you know, so there's somebody wrote this and there's this concern. So no individual thing has been hard. There's no point that I would point to and say, oh, this was difficult. Although Aline has been like working so hard on the formatting. And I'm sure that was a big task, but most of it was just many, many small tasks and being organized, deciding who was going to do what. I know for me, and I think for all of us, there's also a point where we got through that it's like, we've just got to do this again, because I think probably 3/4 of this work is work that will stay. Like, you know, we've got our, you know, method of replying to the authors. We've got right. our social media contract. We've right. got these things that can just go back again and we can, you know, plug and play what people are bringing in. But yeah, I'd say each part was pretty fun. And you look at each part and it's like, oh, this was fine. But there's just so many. It's a lot of details. Self-publishing is a lot of details. Working with 30 different people is a lot of details. doing all the editing, we've had authors in very, very different places in their careers, from people who have multi-published traditionally and are used to a certain way of doing things, you know, people who are multi-published, self-published, people who this is their first thing that is going to appear in print. And so it's been a very different process working with different people, because we have focused this on the WFWA HisFit group and not sent it out to, you know, 1,000 contributors.
Right.
So we've met people where they've come and done a very intensive editing process, which I think is definitely the most fun part, but it is also taken a long time to work
with
all the stories and coordinate them all together.
Right. I know that as an author, my first editing experience was very difficult. You know, so when I got back, you know, essentially what I felt like were red lines all over my manuscript, it was very heart-wrenching for me. And so I can imagine, Elaine, did you have any authors of the, we have 23 that have put stories in, all of you, me, and then, you know, the rest. Did you have any authors that had difficulty with the changes that were suggested or with the edits that were put forward, or did everyone feel very comfortable and just go with it?
To answer your question, no, I don't think we traumatized anyone.
I did not use that word.
We are scary.
Everyone, I think everyone really was very happy with the amount of care that we took with their with their stories. And they, because they knew us and trust, they knew us from the historical
the
fiction
group.
Affinity group.
Right.
And we're all, you know, we've kind of all been together for a couple, 3 years now. They knew that they could trust us, I think. Mm-hmm. And everyone who's, all of the stories, all of the authors that I worked with were just thrilled to have someone taking such care with their work. And there were, you know, we just went through one set of edits and then we'd take a look at it and we'd possibly go through it again, or we, right. you know, we'd say, okay, this is really good. We're going to leave it alone and not touch it again. But it's an iterative process. And it was really a lot of fun for me because I learned a lot about editing other people's work instead of just my own. I was like, thank goodness I'm not the only one that makes this mistake.
I think that's something that's very valuable as an author, is to understand that the editing process isn't someone standing on the other end saying, you're horrible, you're a terrible writer, I can't believe you wrote this, but it's another set of eyes, because things can be seen by someone else that you can't see for yourself.
Right.
You're very close to your own work, and you believe that what you've said is very clear. But of course, you have the story and the character in your head, and you know. And so when you have someone else read it, they can say, this just didn't feel very clear to me. And you look at it and you think, I wonder why. But it allows you then to make some changes to make it clear. Right. So,
and I think the level of trust helps a lot there.
Right. And that's true because all of you are well known to all of the authors that participated. So Carolyn, was it difficult to find 23 authors that wanted to participate? Or did they just come out of the woodwork and they were just ready to go?
I think that there was quite a lot of enthusiasm for this. We sent out a call for submission. And we got some very enthusiastic inquiries. A few people dropped out and said, well, they weren't quite ready to do this after all. But a lot of people submitted stories. And then we're really, to echo what Elaine just said, most were really quite eager to get the feedback and to have another chance to go around and do it again. And I would say that with just a couple of exceptions, everybody did more than one substantial revision. And that includes us, the editors, because we treated ourselves as contributors, because in fact we are, but we edited one another's work with the same kind of scrutiny, friendly scrutiny.
Right.
One other thing I would say is that we offered to people who seemed to need a great deal of revision, phone calls. So several of us had one-on-one or two-on-one exchanges by Zoom to talk through some of the issues. And that, I think, was extremely productive. It did not always mean that those authors did exactly what we thought was appropriate, but rather they rethought things and presented something which was really fresh and their own. So, and I would say for myself, I think this is true of many of our contributors, it was certainly true for me, the experienced writers were often experienced with novel writing.
Yeah.
Very few of us were experienced as short story writers. Kay and Kimberly are both experienced short story writers. I had never done it. And it was, I sort of knew that a short story isn't just a really short novel, but the change of structure that is required was really kind of daunting at first. I think I must have had 5 or 6 drafts that I had to just cut out 3/4 of because it wasn't a story. It was a novel, Precy. That's probably true of many of the contributors.
Yeah.
So it was a big learning curve, both as writers and as editors, and certainly putting together the finished product, which is nearly done. Elaine is our foremost formatter and has done a marvelous job with the interior, and we hired out some wonderful cover designers. So I think I hope everybody will be really pleased with that.
I feel certain. I know that as a contributor, I've written a couple of short stories, but they've never really been put anywhere. You know, like I try it. So this is my first published short story. Mm-hmm. And you're right. It's a very different animal. It's a very different. I love doing flash fiction and I love doing micro flash fiction. 50 words or less is like, I have a real knack for it. And I love doing it. But the short story, it was kind of like, I don't quite know how to end. And I don't know quite know like what needs to be here in the middle. And it, in fact, having done this, it has encouraged me. I am looking to find a good short story course. I would like to take one and just kind of get a better understanding of what is this short story animal, you know? So Elaine.
I just wanted to say, we had mentioned this before, that we gave everyone a 3,000 word limit.
Mm-hmm.
Which 3,000 words is not very many words at all. Yeah.
No, especially when you're used to writing a novel at 82 right. or more thousand, right? Like then it's, yeah.
I mean, 3,000 words is 10 pages.
Yeah.
Period. End of sentence. And that's tough. It's very tough.
It is very tough. Yeah. Who wants, yes, Christy, I see you.
I was just going to say that overall, you know, for people who are thinking about contributing to short stories or our next anthology. I would say that was the biggest struggle that people had, like figuring out what type of plot fit in 3,000 words. Right. And it wasn't so simplistic that like we have going nowhere in the middle. But I mean, a lot of people were trying to write novellas and like squeeze them into 3,000 words. And that was overall probably the biggest editorial thing that we were doing. Is helping people see what part of their vision was right for the format.
Right. I think that you know, a lot of times you think, I see Kimberly, a lot of times you think that you know, I've written a novel, so therefore I should be able to write a short story, or I should be able to write flash fiction, I should be able to write a novella, and you don't quite, there's differences in all of those forms. Kimberly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just wanted to add to the conversation that Elaine and Christy said, because this is true that I love short stories. I love reading short stories, but of course I've written a lot and have had to learn how to do short stories too. So I do agree that one of the biggest aspects were just putting too much into a short story, having too many characters, too many plot points into it. And that was, as you know, as Carolyn and Elaine were talking, going back to the authors. Once we were able to get out what they really wanted to stress, I think that when they rewrote it, they had very clear ideas.
Clear ideas
for the same reason. They're very good writers, but it's just getting used to short stories are very different.
They are. Yeah, it's a very different animal. It's very interesting how different it was. So when you opened this up, I'm going to kind of open it up and just see who has an answer to this one. When you opened it up, you said Feisty Deeds, Historical Fictions of Daring Women. What were you expecting to get? And was it different than what you got? Kay, I saw you do like this. Oh, no, you weren't? Okay.
I think what we were looking for were interesting stories about women. Mm-hmm. The one thing we all agreed we didn't want was we don't want it to necessarily be centered on a famous woman, like a celebrated figure. We really wanted it to be fictitious, everyday women, because that's where the excitement really happens in our everyday lives.
Right.
Who, a teacher or a librarian or the shopkeeper down the road who says or does something that affects you for the rest of your life. Right. And we were looking for that woman. And I think what was really exciting for us as the stories rolled in, that's exactly what we got. But we got women across a span of how many centuries, Carolyn? Four centuries, five
six.
Centuries?
Six.
Six. Six, right?
6 centuries. Well, that's why.
Yeah.
Right.
And the women in the 1970s had a lot to do with the women in the 1670s or the 1570s.
Right.
The cross culture of determined women, women with quiet fierceness, women with a go-get-em attitude, women who didn't accept the societal dictates of their time, no matter how long ago that was. That really comes through in the pages. And I think it's really inspirational for young women today.
I agree. Anybody else? Something that you thought was like you didn't expect? Yes,
Carolyn. Carolyn. We found that 23 stories is a fairly large collection. Mm-hmm. And we divided them into sections. And I thought partly to answer your question about what we found, what we expected, what we found, I might tell you the four sections that we divided our stories into that give you some sense of the different ways that feistiness or obstreperousness or just quiet resistance comes through. The categories we chose are gambling with the unknown, dangerous deeds, moral combat, no T, moral, not mortal, moral combat, and defying domestic authority. Because there are many, many ways to resist something that's a problem. It can be quiet, it can be public, it can be physically dangerous, it certainly can be personally risky. And those I wouldn't say that the stories that we group under those categories are the same in those respects, but it was one way to organize the themes that we discovered were being presented.
I love that. I had not even considered the fact that you would want to be able to separate them somehow and come up with. So when you do that and you separate it into four and you have 23 stories, did they naturally fall rather equally into these sections, or do you have one section that has like lots and another section that only has a couple?
Carolyn's magic. It came out really nice. She shoehorned them into the right spot.
Super.
So a couple of them had to be jammed into a position, but most of them fell fairly naturally into these categories.
That's really interesting. I had not even considered that aspect of writing an anthology. And I think in my mind, and it's because I don't know, I make lists, I would have just done it by like period of time, you know, early, middle, you know what I mean? That's what my mind would have done so naturally. So I love that you came up with these themes. This is what you're going to find in this book. Mm-hmm. Yes, Kay.
I think the other really interesting thing about this is the amount of research that went into each story. Mm-hmm. There was not a story that I didn't learn something from. And I mean, it was like, how do you build a lute? I mean, who knew that was so interesting, you know, or, what bus service looks like in Bakersfield, California, or, you know, various aspects to characters' memories and how in depth authors went into a memory that dramatically affected the main character's life and how that author did that. So whether it was historical facts or whether it was craft, I don't think there was a story that I think all of us learned from, which I found extremely rewarding in the whole process.
Yeah, good point.
I love that. So I'm curious about these women. So we have 23 women. We have 23 authors who've written about 23 women, and these 23 women are not famous. So they're everyday, ordinary people. Right. What kind of ages are these women? Are they all young? Are they middle-aged? Are they are elderly? Or do we have a wide range in terms of their ages as well?
They're young, particularly the ones in the really old century, older centuries. There seemed to be like a theme around someone being young in like the 1570s or the 1670s. And then the women got a little bit older in the more recent centuries, like maybe late 20s or early 30s, or even my story, the protagonist is in her early 40s.
Right? Mine too, yeah.
So that was interesting, but they definitely spanned.
Okay.
Do we have
anyone like our age?
70s? I can't remember. I think
they skewed young. I was intrigued by that, actually. I think in many ways we have a lot of diversity. I like that we have some different formats. We have some romance. We have some speculative. We have some, you know, very, you know, Regency or Victorian. And so we have, we've got different cultures. We've got different time periods. I will say that overall, like one aspect that next time it would be fun to see more diversity is it does skew young. There's a couple of, you know, I think Elaine's and Kay's, you know, a little bit more towards middle age. This collection does skew young. That's what people were finding that twist in, apparently. And that's the time of life to be feisty.
I think it might have been the term feisty. Maybe that's what did it. I'm old and feisty, so I mean, I guess there could be that. But I think a lot of times, I think in society, you think feisty and you definitely think a younger woman. And older women, though they do feisty things, it's seen in a different way, maybe a different term. So it could have been the title. Yes, Kimberly.
It's a good point, Terry, and I was just thinking about that probably because most of the stories, you're absolutely right, someone can be feisty throughout their life, but of course in a short story you're looking for that defining moment when the woman really comes out of herself and has to face this. So most of our stories show that. And so while you're right, and probably, I mean, I also as as a short story writer, in the collection that I had a lot of different age ranges, which I personally like in a short story collection. But I think that you're right that the theme, feisty women, when you're looking for that inciting action that really brings it out, I think for that reason, it might not, you know, skewer a little bit younger.
Yeah, I guess that at the point that you're, you know, 60, 65, 70 years old, it's not that you're not feisty, but you probably have been feisty for a while. So, I mean, you didn't go through up to that point as, you know, just this doormat and nobody bothered you. And then all of a sudden you became feisty. I mean, it doesn't usually happen that way. It's something that you've, you know, kind of pulled with you the whole time. So, yeah, that makes
sense. Well, that would be a good story.
Yeah. Yeah.
Next time.
The doormat write until you're Carrie. 70, right? Write that story. Okay, I've got it. Caroline, did you have something you wanted to say?
Well, I was reflecting on the stories on our list, and there are a couple of stories where a background character, a much older than the central protagonist, is kind of a catalyst for an awakening.
Okay.
You know, for realizing what you should do. So it isn't that that older people, and they are, I believe, all women in the stories, don't have a role in these stories, but it is correct. We have a young skew.
Yeah, well, and that makes sense too, because if you think about it, if you're a feisty older woman and you have the opportunity to do any kind of mentoring in any way to someone who's younger, you're more likely to have that as your role than you are to be the one who's out front, you know, with the daggers, right? You're going to be the one that's showing the younger generation what they need to be doing. So I love that. When is the book coming out? When can we expect it? Elaine, how about you?
I'm waiting for Kimberly. It's coming out. It will be available for pre-order before this, but the release date is June the 8th. Yes, is that right? Mm-hmm. International Women's Day.
Right.
Women's Fiction Day.
Okay. Sorry about that. And we'll have it up on NetGalley, hopefully right around the beginning of May.
Fantastic.
And it will be available for pre-order and wide distribution. And what else can we say about it?
We will perhaps where the profits are going.
Oh yeah. So where are the profits going, Elaine?
The profits are going to the Women's Fiction Writers Association Scholarship Fund.
Fantastic. And what does that scholarship help cover?
So I've been serving on the scholarship committee, and we are just now voting on applicants who have applied to attend our conference. So it's that's one of the specific buckets where we fund participants who couldn't otherwise afford to come to the conference, travel expenses, et cetera. But then we fund things like technology for a writer who can't afford writing software, right? Perhaps like Scrivener, or maybe they want to take a craft class, but they can't afford it. Other ways that we can support authors of need financially, and they really vary, but the scholarship committee at WFWA is a group of maybe a dozen women, and really diverse. And Nadja has been chairing it this past year and doing a great job. So we're really excited to fund the scholarship committee's work.
So let's talk just a quick moment about WFWA, because that's the affinity group, the historical fiction affinity group, is kind of what got this started, but that group would have never existed without WFWA. So who wants to tell me just a little bit about what is it? And for anyone out there who might want to participate, how would they go about doing that, becoming a member? Who wants to pick that one?
First, we have to thank Joan.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
Okay. Joan Fernandez, who is just a force. It took five people to replace her. And then I'll let Elaine take it from there, because she's one of the five.
Okay.
And Kimberly's the one who got me in it. Actually, Joan started the group, I guess, about 3 years ago. Joan Fernandez started the group. Mm-hmm. about 3 years ago, and I believe there were only about 20 members who maybe fewer than that, WFWA members who sort of heard her call for historical fiction lovers to start a new group. And members of the original group reached out to their friends and, you know, author friends. For example, Kimberly was the one who introduced me to the group. And Joan Fernandez had been heading up the group for 3 years on her, doing everything on her own, getting speakers, organizing everything, sending out the newsletters, keeping up with membership. She finally said, I can't do this by myself anymore. I need to go write my novel.
My novel. I have things I have to do.
So I need somebody to take over from me. Well, it turns out that it takes five of us to take over from her. That's how much she was doing on her own. And she's right. Kind of our emeritus leader. She's still on most of our emails for the group. But yeah, we have two people who are doing program stuff, you know, going out and finding speakers. Scheduling all that. And then we have, I'm usually the host, which means I, you know, introduce them, you know, I start the meetings and.
Right.
And
right. I know Patty does newsletter.
Patty Warren does a newsletter. Kim Gottlieb Walker and Deborah Borchert are program ladies.
Right.
And, those three all have works in the anthology, by the way.
Right.
Tamitha Kane is membership. She and Dee Buckingham go back and forth with membership because we've grown to about 140 members.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. This is an affinity group for WFWA.
Right.
So let's talk about that itself. What is WFWA, and why would someone want to be part of that group?
For me, it was the resources that were available. I was searching online about 4 years ago, various pitch workshops, et cetera, and WFWA's pitch and synopsis workshop kind of came up in my Google search. And I dug into that a little bit and realized, wow, this is like a robust, you know, stable of authors that are sharing information and mentoring and providing resources and connections across the globe. But quite, you know, there's a plethora of authors across the United States and also in the Western region, because I live on the West Coast. And I thought this is definitely worth pursuing. So I signed up because membership is, I don't feel is that expensive.
No, it's not. It's very reasonable.
Yeah. Isn't it about $50 a year?
I think it's 55. Yeah. Is it 50? Yeah. It's very, very reasonable. Very reasonable. For a yearly.
And then you have access to all these incredible resources.
Right.
I personally have taken advantage of several different workshops, including the pitch and the synopsis and first 500 page workshops, et cetera. Yeah. And through those, because you're naturally grouped in those craft classes typically, or workshops. And through those, I mean, like, for instance, my original pitch group, we've sort of stayed in touch. And I just did review swaps with three of those authors.
Yeah. Right.
Right. So it's something that really continues to build in terms of your community. And as we all know, no matter what you hear, writing is not a solitary profession.
No. So the actual writing, the moment that you're writing is solitary, but most of everything else is not. That's for sure. I agree. I agree. All right. So what more should I have asked about this anthology that I didn't, that you would love to put out there so that people understand what it is that's going to be coming out on June 8th?
We had fun.
Oh, good. Oh, good. Christy has something.
I think this is a great option for it's like those candy boxes with all the different flavors and you can try them. I think this is a great option for people who enjoy either historical fiction or a focus on women's fiction and women protagonists to pick something up and get to know 23 authors that you might not know, or maybe 21, maybe you know some of them and think, oh, this is neat stories. I want to look into this in either a historical period, like I forget who was saying we learned something about all these different places, say, oh, I want to learn more about this. Let me research this or look at an author. Right. But these 3,000 word stories are just the perfect amount. You know, you can sit down and read a story like in between things while you're waiting in the car pickup line or whatever, and dive into a bunch of things. And I think it's just a great opportunity for readers to just try out and test a lot of things that they didn't normally read or didn't know is out there. And so I think it's just, I hope it'll be really fun for readers to experiment.
Wonderful. Carolyn.
Certainly, I agree with that. And I also wanted to point out that each story is followed by a very brief author note that gives the author's background, but also says something about the period or the event that the story is about. And I myself found those really so interesting because while they are fictions, these are not real people. They're not historical figures that are the characters in these stories. The events or the periods are often rooted in history. For example, your own story, Terry.
Right.
With the hurricane, I didn't know about that, and I thought it was fascinating. So it's a collection that gives you a kind of, every now and then there's a route that sets you right down in the past, which I think is one of the great things about historical fiction generally. And here you've got 23 routes.
Yeah, wonderful. Yeah, Kimberly.
Yeah, and I just wanted to add on to what Christy and Carolyn said, because, you know, as someone who just loves short stories myself and I love writing them, I find that I often write short stories between novels because sometimes I just need a little break. I like to, you know how it is with a novel, you have so many characters to keep track, so many plot points, and sometimes it's nice to just take a break, write a short story, and then you get back to the novel. But I think as a reader, it's the same way. We all love reading novels, but even people sometimes, if they don't read short stories, I think this would be a good one for them to give it a try. Because again, they're all 3,000 words. We did that on purpose because we knew many were not short story writers. And it's true that even though people are more novelists, it is hard to write a really long short story, and also for editing, we thought it would be easier. But it's a perfect 10 pages, 11 pages, all over the world, all different time frames, grouped together so beautifully, especially by Carolyn, who put them together in these themes that have you thinking, because you're jumping between all over the United States. We have England, we have France, Italy, a Chinese woman who comes to America. So you have different perspectives. So it's just nice. You can dive in when you want. And since, you know, we're all so busy, and you just can do it when you have time. You can dip in when you want. You can read a story, then you could read something else, come back into the story. So I think it's really the perfect gift. And that's why one of the reasons we wanted to put it out on a Women's Fiction Day, that, you know, people who already love women's fiction, love historical fiction. I mean, as I think Christy already pointed out, we already have, there's some that are romance, there's some that are a little bit mysterious or some type of a little bit thriller. So there are some things that you can really look at, even whatever you like as far as stories, and really just give it a try. So that makes it quite a nice for yourself or for gifts.
Wonderful.
And we have ghosts.
Ghosts. Well, I mean, that's it. Everybody should run right out and buy it with a ghost, right? All right. Well, I want to thank all of you for being here with me today. I know how difficult it is to do schedules where everybody can meet at the same time. And you did such a beautiful job of it. You're obviously very in tune with one another, because I expected it to be a very difficult thing. And in less than a week, I get this message from Elaine that says, everybody can meet on this day at this time. And I was like, that's not even possible.
Across nine time zones.
Yes, and that's the thing too, right? is we have several time zones here and people, I think, Christy, you're traveling and there's just all of this going on. And yet we all met here together. Elaine.
Well, I was going to say, and Kimberly is in Rome.
Right.
So that nine time zones also includes, a different part of our hemisphere.
Right. And so it was really crazy. So I want to really thank you for coming onto the show, talking to us about Feisty Deeds, this anthology. I encourage everyone, do go out and get this book. It helps other authors, which is fabulous. It is a wonderful way of kind of delving into historical fiction and women's fiction and getting a feel for what is out there. Even if these aren't things you normally read, I think this is a good introduction that maybe after reading it, you'll say, well, maybe I do like historical fiction and didn't realize it, because there's a lot of really good authors in this book. So thank you, ladies, for being with me today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to Online for Authors, where I, Terry M. Brown, author of character-driven fiction and host of the podcast, introduce readers to characters they'd love to invite to lunch. Tune in next Tuesday for another podcast episode.